Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, we open our show with the latest updates from the Grossmont Union High School District, where despite facing a recall effort, four conservative trustees have refused to rescind mass firings and now announced the resignation of their controversial chief of staff with a full year's salary as severance pay just weeks after he was hired. A recall effort against El Cajon Councilman Phil Ortiz over his stance on the city's police cooperating with ICE has cleared its first hurdle, and organizers are now working to gather enough signatures to qualify for the ballot. But opponents are crying foul over comments posted on social media by a recall organizer suggesting the community would be better off if MAGA leaders supporting the recall die off. Disgraced former El Cajon Councilman Ben Colasha was back in court last week with a last-ditch effort to delay reporting for a jail sentence in June along with his wife on contempt of court charges. But the judge wasn't buying what the Colashos were pitching. On Green Scene, hear about federal cuts to efforts to combat climate change and how access to the Pacific Crest Trail, which runs through East County, could be restricted by cuts and layoffs at the Department of the Interior. If you visited the San Diego Safari Park recently, be sure to listen up for a warning from County Health about a wild bat at the park that tested positive for rabies. Firefighters and the state fire marshal came to Spring Valley last week to hold a live burn demonstration and tips on how to prepare your home for wildfires, and we'll have details. Then in sports, the San Diego Padres scored a big win for the history books against the Colorado Rockies with a crushing 21-0 victory. The National League West is neck and neck right now. Learn the score on our show today. From California News Service, legislation has been introduced in Sacramento to reduce utility bills after some utilities dramatically raised electric rates despite soaring profits. On our Capitol Report, hear about an executive order from President Donald Trump that aims to eliminate all federal funding for public news service and national public radio in the president's latest attacks on the media and freedom of the press. The Catholic Church's new pope, Leo XIV, has ties to San Diego. Hear local reactions on our show today. On 2025 Talks from Public News Service, we'll have some national news stories, including the latest on tariff negotiations, how tariffs are hurting small businesses, penalties for some SNAP recipients, concerns over the privacy of immigration data, and more. On the Yonder Report, we'll have some rural news stories, including cuts in the AmeriCorps and Head Start programs, how climate change-related disasters are impacting pregnant women and children, as well as the upcoming Jumping Frog Jubilee in California, a tradition that dates back to a Mark Twain tale during the Gold Rush era. With mountain lion sightings on the rise here in East County, the San Diego County Library in Descanso has a special event coming up on mountain lions, and we'll have details. A $65,000 reward is now being offered to help solve the cold case murder of a U.S. Navy man in La Mesa. A set of bills called Care for All Californians has been introduced into the state legislature, aiming to improve health care for our state's residents as the federal government is reducing benefits. And finally, on Destination East County, we'll tell you about some fun and festive events coming up across our inland region during the last half of May. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters. The Grossmont Union High School District Board majority refused a last-ditch chance to rescind its layoffs of credentialed teachers, librarians, counselors, and psychologists at the May 8th board meeting, despite yet more protests and angry comments from constituents. Before the meeting at Grossmont High School's event center, a crowd gathered outside, chanting, "Save our schools, support our students." At that rally, flyers and a petition to recall the four trustees, Scott Eckert, Gary Woods, Robert Shield, and Jim Kelly, who voted for the mass firings in February, were circulated. The conservative board majority voted to fire 49 full-time credentialed teachers, all nine librarians, as well as counselors and other staff. Acting Superintendent Sandra Wesso argued on behalf of the board majority, saying the cuts were difficult and necessary in growing uncertain economic and financial times. She stated, without offering examples, that other districts were going through the same hardships. Trustee Eckert argued that it is unwise to rely on the money in the district's reserves to bail out the school district, given the prospect of a recession and not knowing how much money the governor's budget will include for education. In public comments, speakers criticized the cuts as unnecessary and complained about a lack of transparency by the district. James Messina, president of the Grossmont Education Association, the teachers' union, testified, "We are not in a financial crisis." Insisting that the district does not need to make any cuts to employees or any restructured changes now or in the future. Messina pointed out the irony of finalizing the cuts during Teacher Appreciation Week. He also pointed out that the Grossmont district's percentage of spending on salaries and benefits is about the same as every other public school district in San Diego County, adding, "School districts are not supposed to hoard funds or turn profits. Today's tax dollars are used to educate today's students to improve society." A group of students from Grossmont High criticized the gutting of their dance program, calling the cuts deplorable and chanting, "Let them dance." Other speakers complained that board members have refused to answer their emails or provide detailed justifications for specific cuts. Another speaker slammed board majority members' posts on social media as inflammatory and gaslighting. She suggested that the firing of librarians and counselors may be motivated by what she called narrow-minded values. Three of the trustees work for private Christian schools or homeschooling programs, and some have made posts criticizing Black History Month and intolerance of LGBTQ students, such as, "The gays are coming for your children." The woman slammed the dismantling of student services and mental health programs, as well as efforts to remove books with LGBTQ characters and books that criticize systemic injustice and racism. An uproar from the audience arose when Board President Woods tried to skip over discussion of the cuts, which was on the agenda. Audience members shouted, "Illegal! Brown Act violation!" and "Cowards!" Trustee Chris Veit, the only trustee who voted against the cuts, called for discussion, and the board majority rehashed the same points made by Acting Superintendent Wesso, without addressing audience points raised. Then Veit made a motion to rescind the layoffs, but no other trustee would second the motion. Student board member Maggie Kelly, visibly upset, left the meeting. After the public session, the board adjourned to a private session. Board President Woods and Trustee Veit returned with a surprise announcement that the majority had voted to accept the resignation of newly named Chief of Staff Jerry Hobbs, who has become mired in controversy. Hobbs will be paid a full year's salary of $186,000, even though he's only been working for the district for less than 3 months in his most recent position. The board drew sharp criticism when it appointed Hobbs to the newly created chief of staff position in March at a hefty salary, at the same time numerous staffers were being sent pink slip notices of layoffs. A recent Voice of San Diego report now reveals that Hobbs has previously resigned from the Grossmont District 7 years ago after being investigated for misconduct. An investigation cleared him, finding that he had been retaliated against along with several other employees. Hobbs has told East County Magazine that he was retaliated against back then for standing up against segregation of disabled students. He became a paralegal and went to work at the law firm J.W. Howard Attorneys, which drafted a settlement agreement that allowed Hobbs to work at the district again. However, according to a memo written by John Howard, the principal attorney, Hobbs appears to have inserted language without the knowledge of Howard or other attorneys. That language allowed Hobbs to return with full tenure. The district has offered no explanation as to why Hobbs resigned after only recently being hired back as chief of staff, or whether he was asked to step down amid the recent controversy widely covered by local media. With an impending recall campaign underway and an unwillingness to rescind pink slips, the governing board and the Grossmont community remains poised for continuing conflict. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The initial round of 60 signatures to recall El Cajon Council member Phil Ortiz have been validated, City Clerk Angela Cortez confirms. The organizers, Latinos en Acción, now must publish their intent in a local newspaper and have 120 days to gather signatures from 20% of the 11,320 registered voters in District 4 in order to put the recall measure on the ballot. Increasing the controversy, recall opponent Amy Reichert is slamming recall leader Marianne Branham for comments Branham posted on an Instagram video of a press conference held by conservatives who oppose sanctuary cities and oppose the recall effort. Branham posted, "We will be better off when all of the people in this video die off." Reichert, a conservative activist, posted on her social media that Branham just wished death on me and State Senator Brian Jones, along with others in the video. East County Magazine reached out to Branham, who confirmed the post was hers. She said her post was based on the ideologies of people who she believes want to exclude people of color. She added, "These MAGA Republicans are cancer. We need more empathy and justice." Asked if she is concerned that her own words could incite violence, Branham said that is not her intent. She replied, "We'll be better off when all of these MAGA Republicans die off in 20 to 30 years. I'm not saying they get killed or harmed," but doubled down, stating, "I will continue to say that these people are cancerous cells that need to die off." Latinos in Acción is seeking to recall Ortiz for voting for a resolution allowing the city's police to cooperate with federal immigration authorities. State law allows cooperation only for undocumented immigrants who have been convicted of specific violent felonies. Ortiz has said he believes state law doesn't go far enough in that it excludes crimes such as arson. But the city measure goes farther, allowing police to cooperate based on mere accusations of a serious crime, not convictions. Numerous residents packed the April 22nd City Council meeting, where Ortiz was served with a recall notice by Branham, who stated, "You betrayed the large immigrant community here." Many who spoke in support said they don't want to protect criminals, but are concerned about non-criminals being swept up and deported, as has happened in other areas around the country, including people with no criminal records being sent to a prison in El Salvador. Others have spoken of being afraid to go to school or work. A pastor quoted Jesus, quoting a biblical passage, urging people to welcome immigrants. Supporters of the city's action said they're concerned about public safety and about getting criminals out of the community. Several voiced support for Ortiz and opposition to the recall. While organizers worked to gather signatures to recall Ortiz, on his social media, Ortiz posted a plea for donations to help fight the recall. Councilman Ortiz states, "I ran for city council because I have a desire to serve my community. Now, my ability to continue to serve my friends and neighbors is being threatened by a recall effort against my seat on the city council. From homelessness to safety, public improvements, fiscal responsibility, business advocacy, and many other topics, I am proud of the work we have accomplished together." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
A last-minute effort by former El Cajon Councilman Ben Colosio and his wife Jessica to postpone their 8-day jail sentence has been rejected by Superior Court Judge Wendy Behan. The Colosios have been ordered to surrender on June 9th to begin serving their sentence, which was imposed for criminal contempt of court. The action stems from a 2017 civil lawsuit against the Colosios, who were accused of using false social media aliases, fake polls, and altered photos to defame plaintiffs, including a beauty pageant queen, a taco shop owner, and attorney Lena Chari. Colosio resigned from the El Cajon City Council immediately after a settlement was announced, with most plaintiffs in that case amid calls by the public for him to resign. Chari refused to settle her case and secured a hefty judgment against the Colosios, who repeatedly failed to show up and provide financial records to enable Chari to collect the money for her judgment. The court charged and convicted the Colosios with criminal contempt of court and issued bench warrants for their arrest in May of 2023. But the couple had moved to North Carolina, where Colosio worked under the pseudonym Chef Benjamin Epicure at Smithmore Castle, a luxury hotel and wedding venue in North Carolina. Colosio has also said he now works part of the year in Dubai. The couple claimed that Jessica could not travel due to pregnancy and obtained postponement of their jail term until June 9th of this year. However, Colosio appeared in court last month in an unrelated civil case filed against him by the city of El Cajon over alleged illegal code violations for unpermitted additions at the couple's Fletcher Hills residence, which they advertise as a bed and breakfast inn. The outcome in that case remains pending. After learning that a judge had retired in the civil case, the Colosios sought a hearing May 7th from Judge Wendy Behan, asking her to stay their bench warrants based on newly discovered evidence against Chari, which they failed to detail. They also asked that they be allowed to pay a modest fine instead of jail time, or that the jail sentence be postponed yet again until 2026. The Colosios stated, "This request is necessary to prevent a grave miscarriage of justice," claiming without evidence that Chari misrepresented facts and tampered with evidence. Ben Colosio has a long history of fraudulent actions. He pled guilty to misdemeanor counts of workers' compensation fraud in October 2015. He failed to disclose his criminal background when he ran for office in 2016 and won while still on probation. The state revoked the nonprofit status of a beauty pageant and a chamber of commerce that he ran after an East County Magazine investigation raised questions. But Judge Behan wasn't swayed by Colosio's arguments. She noted that the Colosios had previously claimed they were unable to travel to San Diego to serve their sentence, yet appeared in the San Diego courtroom last month for a full-week trial with the city. Judge Behan denied their request and ordered the couple to surrender on June 9th to begin serving their 8-day jail sentence. If they fail to show up, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports they could be arrested and jailed any time they come in contact with law enforcement, plus extra penalties for failing to appear. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Elected officials spoke out Tuesday at an energy security summit in Washington, D.C., calling on Congress to protect federal climate investments and environmental regulations. The Trump administration has begun canceling climate-related projects that were funded by Congress during the Biden administration. Yetiti Badaki is an actress and environmental advocate who says Trump should not be able to block funds appropriated by Congress.
The Inflation Reduction Act and environmental regulations are being besieged by a president who believes that his every want should magically become the law of the land. That is not how the Constitution works.
The administration has taken multiple actions to boost oil and gas production while working against offshore wind power and government rebates for electric vehicles. And Republicans in the U.S. House just voted to rescind a waiver that allows California to enforce strict vehicle emissions standards. Dr. Pat Spearman is a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel and former President Pro Tem of the Nevada State Senate. She says our reliance on oil and gas plays a big part in our military entanglements, which take a toll on service members.
It's about the people that we lose. 6 out of every 10 deaths in Iraq and Afghanistan were somehow related to oil, guarding it, moving it, offloading it, something. How many more must die because we can't curb our appetite for fossil fuels?
Adelanto Vice Mayor Daniel Ramos is a Navy veteran and says Congress should not cut climate crisis mitigation programs such as Justice 40, which allocates 40% of its funding to low-income communities overburdened by air and water pollution.
The Justice 40 initiative, along with the Inflation Reduction Act and a bipartisan infrastructure law, provide crucial federal resources for clean water, sustainable infrastructure, and green spaces. We must actively advocate to protect and maximize these investments for all communities.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org. Access to the beloved Pacific Crest Trail may soon be limited due to a drop in federal grants and big layoffs proposed for federal public lands agencies. In the next 2 weeks, the Trump administration is expected to release the reduction in force targets for the National Park Service, the U.S. Forest Service, and the Bureau of Land Management. Megan Wargo with the Pacific Crest Trail Association says federal grant money dried up last October, so they've had to cancel 56 weeks of crew maintenance work on the trails.
If large sections of the trails are forced to be closed because of this lack of maintenance and care, that's devastating that folks won't be able to access their public lands because of these cuts.
Volunteers help keep the trails clear of debris and repair erosion from storm damage. The Pacific Crest Trail runs more than 2,600 miles from Mexico to Canada. It includes landscapes from Anza Borrego in the south to Sequoia, Kings Canyon, and Lake Tahoe in the Sierras, and points north. Wargo says the National Trails System Act calls for a public-private partnership to manage the national scenic trails. The Pacific Crest Trail Association normally gets between $667,000 and $1 million per year in federal funding, about a quarter of what it needs to help maintain the PCT.
Typically, that breakdown is about 25% value that's coming from the federal government, while the other 75% is coming through private donations and that volunteer service hour value.
Wargo adds that cuts to the federal workforce hobble agencies' abilities to make grants and approve volunteer projects, and that means less brush gets cleared, raising the risk of wildfires in California. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public health alert. County public health officials are looking for people who may have come in contact with a wild bat found at the San Diego Zoo Safari Park on May 7th at 10:45 a.m. that later tested positive for rabies. The bat was found at the base of the public elevator in the African Loop near the hot air balloon ride. There is only one public elevator in the park. A trained staff member collected the bat safely. The county public health laboratory confirmed the bat was infected with rabies. If you or anybody in your family or group were in the area of the elevator and stairs on Wednesday, May 7th, before 10:45 a.m. and you had direct contact with the bat, or you know someone who may have touched it, you are urged to contact County Public Health Services as soon as possible at 619-692-8499. Dr. Ankita Kadakia, County Interim Public Health Officer, says human rabies is usually fatal without prompt post-exposure vaccine and treatment. Rabies transmission can happen from a bat bite or if the bat's saliva comes in contact with a cut or with mucous membranes such as the eyes, nose, or mouth. Visitors who had no physical contact with the bat are not at risk for rabies. So far in 2025, the county has detected 3 rabid bats. There are many species of bats found in our county that feed on insects such as mosquitoes. Other bat species feed on nectar from plants and pollinate them in the process. You may see bats occasionally around sunset when they are most active. It's important to appreciate wildlife from a safe distance and not touch them. If you do come in direct contact with a bat, wash the affected area immediately with soap and water and get medical advice right away. Rabies is a preventable viral disease that is most often transmitted through the bite of a rabid animal. Symptoms of rabies in people can take weeks or months to develop after being exposed to a rabid animal. But once symptoms develop, rabies is almost always deadly. However, prompt post-exposure treatment after exposure to the virus will prevent the disease and save lives.
The Office of the State Fire Marshal and the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety partnered for a live burn demonstration at the County Fire Training Center on Campbell Road in Spring Valley last week. Firefighters ignited 2 structures, one with defensible space, such as hardscaping close to the structure, the other with no defensible space. The latter went up in flames swiftly, while the other did not. This shows how small, proactive steps can significantly influence a home's survival during a wildfire. Central to the demonstration was Zone Zero, a 5-foot perimeter around a home that is kept clear of flammable materials to prevent ignition from wind-driven embers. Roy Wright, CEO of the Insurance Institute, says, "The science is clear. Creating a non-combustible buffer around your house is the most effective defense we have, so when embers land in that space, there's nothing to ignite." He adds that you don't have to choose between safety and curb appeal, since there are, in his words, smart, attractive ways to have both. State Fire Marshal Chief Daniel Berlant says that the devastating Southern California wildfires in January are stark reminders that wildfires are now a year-round threat. He urged homeowners, "Fight to be the house standing after a wildfire occurs. Maintain defensible space and harden your home. He emphasized that safety begins with being prepared and with all of us, neighbors, local groups, and state agencies working side by side to reduce risk and save lives. Other attendees, including County Fire Chief Tony Meacham, State Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara, and local officials. An important step is to protect your home from embers by having Class A roofing, ember-resistant vents, and defensible space, including clearing away dry brush and combustibles such as firewood near your home and adding hardscaping in the first 5 feet around your house. To learn more about the Wildfire Prepared Home Program and how to participate, visit wildfireprepared.org. For tips on how to prepare your property for wildfire, visit readyforwildfire.org. Another good source is the firesafesdcounty.org website. It's important to pack a go bag in case of evacuation, to have an escape plan, and to follow the county's emergency alerts. You can also sign up for East County Wildfire and Emergency Alerts at eastcountymagazine.org. The burn presentation was part of Wildfire Preparedness Week statewide, proclaimed by Governor Gavin Newsom to raise awareness. In addition, over 700 local firefighters and some 100 law enforcement personnel participated in multi-agency wildfire preparedness exercises across San Diego County. The state is also pitching in. Over 2,200 controlled burns have been conducted on state lands to reduce fuel. According to Governor Newsom, in recent years, California has treated nearly 2 million acres. This work is vital to slowing and reducing the intensity of wildfires and provides areas from which personnel can safely and aggressively suppress fires. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
This is Miriam Raftery with a sports report. The San Diego Padres etched their names in the record books with a 21-0 shutout against the Colorado Rockies at Coors Field on Saturday, May 10th. The dominating performance marked the first time that a major league team scored 20 or more runs while getting a 9-inning shutout from its starting pitcher since 1889. In just his second major league start, Padres pitcher Stephen Kolek threw a complete game shutout, allowing just 5 hits and no runs. Meanwhile, the Padres offense exploded with 24 hits, including 4 by Jackson Merrill, who missed 24 games after injuring his right hamstring in early April. The Padres hit 5 home runs from Xander Bogaerts, Jake Cronenworth, Jason Hayworth, Gavin Sheets, and Fernando Tatis Jr. The Padres' 21 runs were the second most in franchise history, surpassed only by a 24-8 win over the Washington Nationals back in 2021. The Rockies later fired their manager, Bud Black, and bench coach, Mike Redmond. Black, the Padres' manager from 2007 to 2015, was named the National League Manager of the Year in 2010, and he's a San Diego State alumni. The Rockies have been outscored by 134 runs this season. The 21-0 romp put the Padres briefly back into first place before they lost the final game of the series against the Rockies 9-3 on Sunday and slipped back into second place in the National League West. The LA Dodgers now head into the second week of May with a Major League Baseball leading 27-14 record. The San Francisco Giants are also staying close in third place at 24-17. During their recent road trip, the Padres welcomed back Jason Merrill, Jake Cronenworth, Brandon Lockridge, and Sean Reynolds from the injured list. This week, the Padres have a 6-game homestand with games against the Los Angeles Angels and the Seattle Mariners.
Supporters of the Campaign for Affordable Power are pressing state lawmakers to pass a series of reform bills aimed at big investor-owned utilities like Edison, PG&E, and San Diego Gas and Electric. Edison brought in more than $1.6 billion in profit last year and has raised rates 85% over the last decade. However, the company is still asking the California Public Utilities Commission for another big rate increase after the LA fires. Lee Trotman with the Utility Reform Network in Oakland is against further rate hikes.
The way to stop these utilities from getting away with these rate increases is by publicly participating. And you can actually call in during the CPUC meetings. You can go online. You have to make yourself heard.
All three utility companies say they need rate increases to cover their costs. The California Senate Appropriations Committee is holding a hearing today on a reform bill that promotes public financing of electrical infrastructure. Advocates for the bill argue that the current method of bond financing makes projects more expensive. Trotman says another bill that will be heard by the Assembly Appropriations Committee on Wednesday would restrict how utilities can use money earned from ratepayers.
They'll use the ratepayers' money for lobbying, promotional advertising, and other non-energy-related expenses out of the monthly energy bills, which so far has been legal.
Other bills being considered by the legislature would require cost savings to be passed on to customers and would ban power shutoffs during wildfire smoke days and industrial accidents. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
President Donald Trump has issued an executive order to defund public media, but the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, or CPB, the nonprofit organization that oversees National Public Radio and the Public Broadcasting Service, is firing back at President Donald Trump's executive order to cease both direct and indirect federal funding for both of these media outlets. NPR and PBS provide a broad range of programming, from independent news reporting to arts coverage and popular children's programming such as Sesame Street. Locally, federal defunding of public broadcasting would also impact KBBS TV and radio, which reaches audiences countywide. In his executive order, Trump claims, "Neither entity presents a fair, accurate, or unbiased portrayal of current events to taxpaying citizens, despite the fact that the independent polls and fact-checkers have found NPR and PBS to be amongst the most trusted and reliable news outlets in the U.S. The Poynter Institute is a nonprofit media institute and newsroom that provides fact-checking, media literacy, and journalism ethics training to citizens and journalists. A study by Poynter found NPR listeners to be the most well-informed on current events based on a survey comparing listeners and viewers of major media outlets. In addition, polls over the years by the nonpartisan GFK, Roper Public Affairs and Media, have consistently found PBS to be the most trusted source of news and national affairs, as well as for educational children's programming. The Center for Public Broadcasting has called Trump's order illegal. Patricia Harrison, president and CEO of the CPB, says, "CPB is not a federal executive agency subject to the president's authority. Congress directly authorized and funded CPB to be a private nonprofit corporation wholly independent of the federal government. Congress expressly forbade any department, agency, officer, or employee of the United States to exercise any direction, supervision, or control over educational television or radio broadcasting, or over CPB or any of its grantees or contractors," Harrison points out. "Congress allocates federal funding for the CPB and specifies how it shall be spent, according to NPR. The funding is carried out in two-year cycles, which is a structure designed to help shield public media from political pressure." Paula Kerger, PBS president and CEO, told ABC News that a loss in federal funding could negatively impact rural communities. "PBS stations are dependent on government funding, and content from children's programming to emergency alerts could be negatively impacted by cuts," Kerger says. Kerger told ABC News that PBS was formed as a way to bring dollars together from around the country from all our stations, and to help create the kids' contents that people have loved for many decades and that have really raised generations of children. Catherine Marr, NPR president and CEO, vowed to fight back in a statement that NPR released. We will vigorously defend our right to provide essential news, information, and life-saving services to the American public. The President's order is an affront to the First Amendment rights of NPR and locally owned and operated stations throughout America to produce on-air programming that meets the needs of their communities, she adds. According to Marr, the executive order jeopardizes the national airing of NPR newscasts and other programs. PBS offers a lot of educational content, while NPR offers more news and music. Both provide locally grounded content and reach more than 99% of the population at no cost. In many communities, these stations also serve as a key component of emergency and disaster response systems, particularly in rural communities. Congress allocated $535 million to the CPB for the current fiscal year and fully funded it until September 30, 2027. But Trump is asking Congress to claw back those funds, which flow to public broadcasting stations nationwide. NPR and PBS are both funded through a combination of public and private funding, according to ABC News. The CPB provides some of that funding, while individuals, foundations, and corporations make private donations. Mayer and Kerger both testified at a House Oversight Committee in March, where they spoke about their mission to provide nonpartisan news and programming to the American public without charge. Mayer told Republican-led committee, "It is critical for NPR's newsroom to operate with the highest journalistic standards. That means they do their jobs independently, and as CEO, I have no editorial role at NPR." NPR helps to fund 246 member institutions operating more than 1,000 stations nationwide. Trump has a history of hostility towards a free press. Most recently, he posted on Truth Social, "Republicans must defend and totally dissociate themselves from NPR and PBS, the radical left monsters that so badly hurt our country." During a university commencement address in Alabama, Trump told journalism majors that he's not sure if he likes the press. He has repeatedly called American journalists enemies of the people. After a judge blocked his effort to eliminate Voice of America, which disseminates news overseas, Trump has ordered its independent news coverage to be replaced by the One America News Network, a San Diego-based outlet that FactChecker has found even more biased than Fox News. During the first Trump administration, One America ordered its stations across the nation to have its broadcasters read White House press releases word for word as news, without revealing the source or providing any independent fact-checking or balance. Trump's appointee as the nation's chief broadcast regulator, Federal Communications Commission chairperson Brendan Carr, launched an investigation into NPR and PBS. Carr contends that corporate underwriting spots violate laws banning advertisements. Carr also questioned federal funding of the networks and their non-commercial status. The networks say they've been urged repeatedly by the agency and Congress to develop private financial support and have worked with the FCC to ensure that their content falls within FCC guidelines. Journalism organizations and free speech experts are also voicing alarm over Trump's efforts to defund public broadcasting. PEN America is an organization devoted to defending free speech and rights of journalists in the U.S. Tim Richardson, Journalism and Disinformation Program Director at PEN America, calls Trump's executive order another targeted, vindictive overreach of executive authority that aims to silence news outlets that have not towed the line by unquestioningly reporting the president's preferred narrative. The overreach is sweeping and is a clear effort to intimidate and chill speech. In a statement on PEN America's website, Richard continues, "For nearly 60 years, Congress has recognized the vital role public broadcasting plays, especially in local communities and underserved rural areas, allocating funds specifically to support these efforts." He concludes, "At a time when the White House is pressuring news organizations to conform to its political narratives and cutting support globally for independent news outlets, we're seeing the dangers of an information environment where propaganda replaces journalism. Congress must stand firm in its commitment to defending a free and independent press and recognize the White House defunding efforts for what they are, a direct attack on truth, accountability, and democracy." Reporting on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Juliet Sanders.
In a historic move, the Conclave of Cardinals at the Vatican has chosen Chicago Cardinal Robert Francis Prevost to be the 267th Pope, the first from the United States to lead the Catholic Church worldwide. He will serve as Pope Leo XIV, succeeding the late Pope Francis. The new Pope greeted the crowd gathered at St. Peter's Basilica at the Vatican, where he spoke in both Italian and Spanish, saying, "Peace be with you all." His appointment came as a surprise, since he was not among the top contenders named in media reports, leading to speculation that he may have emerged as a consensus compromise candidate chosen on the second day of the conclave. As cardinal, he granted few interviews. But at a 2023 Vatican press conference, he stated, "Our work is to enlarge the tent and to let everyone know they are welcome inside the church." He has supported Pope Francis's progressive stances on social issues such as helping the poor and protecting immigrants, and has been critical of both President Donald Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance urging compassion for all people. He has also voiced support for battling climate change and reforms to prevent gun violence, and in one of his first statements as Pope, he called for peace in Gaza. But he has conservative views on abortion and has opposed women in church leadership roles. He has voiced compassion for the LGBTQ community, yet said in an interview back in 2012 that he viewed homosexuality as at odds with the gospel. Pope Francis allowed church busings of same-sex couples, though not gay marriage, and it's unclear whether Pope Leo supports all of these changes. Born in America and educated in Chicago and later Rome, Robert Prevost, now Pope Leo, has served as prefect of the Dicastery for Bishops, president of the Pontifical Commission for Latin America, and as a bishop in Peru, part of an Augustine order. The Augustines have their western U.S. province right here in San Diego. In fact, the new pope once visited St. Augustine High School in San Diego to celebrate Mass during the school's 90th anniversary in its 2012-2013 school year. The school posted on Facebook, "To now see him step onto the balcony of St. Peter's Basilica as the 267th pope is nothing short of humbling. A fellow Augustinian and man of deep faith, his president saints left a lasting impression, and now his papacy begins with the same spirit of service, wisdom, and humility. We're proud, we're inspired, and we're praying for his journey ahead." San Diego Auxiliary Bishop Michael Pham told NBC7 that the new pope understands the needs of the people, adding that he expects to see continuity with the work of Pope Francis to reach out and support marginalized, vulnerable people. The University of San Diego issued a statement celebrating Cardinal Prevost's selection as the first American-born pope to lead the world's 1.4 billion Catholics. Pope Leo embodies the university's mission and vision, one that seeks to affirm the dignity of every human being by building bridges and leading with compassion, the university stated. The new pope's heritage includes Afro-Caribbean roots, the New York Times reports, since he's descended from Creole people of color in New Orleans, who also have French ancestry, though his brother has said the pope and his family do not identify as black. Genealogist Jari Onora has traced the pope's family tree to Haiti and the Dominican Republic. He told the New York Times, "I hope that it will highlight the long history of black Catholics, both free and enslaved, in this country, which includes the Holy Father's family." Yusef Miller with the North County Equity and Justice Coalition notes that there are over 3 million African-American Catholics. Miller, who is Muslim, said he hopes the new pope will be conscious of the burdensome plight for people of color in America's legal justice system. World leaders voiced congratulations. President Donald Trump posted on social media, "It is such an honor to realize that he is the first American pope. What excitement and what a great honor for our country. I look forward to meeting Pope Leo XIV. It will be a very meaningful moment." Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky sent congratulations on X, posting, "Ukraine deeply values the Holy See's consistent position in upholding international law, condemning the Russian Federation's military aggression against Ukraine, and protecting the rights of innocent civilians." And European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen stated, "We wish that his pontificate be guided by wisdom and strength as he leads the Catholic community and inspires the world through his commitment to peace and dialogue." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. Next up, we'll have some important national news headlines from Public News Service, and then we'll be back with more local and regional news.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The United States has a massive $1.2 trillion trade deficit. So the president declared a national emergency and imposed tariffs. And we're confident that the deal we struck with our Chinese partners will help us to work toward resolving that national emergency.
Trade Representative Jamison Greer says he's confident negotiations between the U.S. and China, now started in Switzerland, can reduce the massive tariffs both have imposed. A new survey from Small Business for America's Future shows more than two-thirds of small business owners are worried about the impact the import taxes will have on the economy. Gladys Harrison, the owner of Omaha-based Big Mama's Kitchen and Catering, says her suppliers may have to raise prices beyond what she or her customers can afford.
They're telling me that they could see a 25 to 145% increase with these tariffs in what they're going to charge me for my seasonings.
The Supreme Court is preparing to hear arguments on President Donald Trump's executive order blocking some birthright citizenship. Most legal scholars, including many conservatives, say the 14th Amendment grants automatic citizenship to almost all children born in the U.S. to non-citizen parents. Trump's order is facing 10 lawsuits. The Supreme Court has ruled the administration's ban on transgender people serving openly in the military can, for the moment, go ahead. Navy veteran Lindsay Church is the executive director of Minority Veterans of America.
People are worried about what comes next, where they're going to live, what their healthcare situation is going to be, how they're going to be employed, how quickly they're going to be purged from the military.
Digital privacy advocates are warning immigrants about data searches at U.S. borders. Lam Tuivo, investigative reporter with Documented New York, repeats the advice lawyers are giving migrants.
Ask yourself what might happen if data that you have on your devices or that you have on your social media might be leaked to a Border Patrol agent.
Vo says there is also a clear pattern of the administration seeking personal data on immigrants from federal benefit programs, including Social Security and SNAP, even on people who don't qualify. A frayed ceasefire between India and Pakistan may be holding for the moment following U.S. mediation. Both countries are claiming victory in the four-day conflict over Kashmir, but have agreed to stand down as talks continue. Congress is trying to fix a flaw in food assistance policy. A change in a past farm bill meant that paid job training counted against SNAP eligibility. Leah Bacon at the Center for Employment Opportunities says they support a bipartisan bill to help people avoid that bind.
For far too long, people have really had to make an impossible decision to either put food on the table for themselves and their families or invest in their future through workforce development. That really can't be the status quo.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hey, how are you? Well,
for the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. DOGE budget cuts to America's premier agency for national service will leave rural gaps. Julia Tilton reports.
AmeriCorps grants have been slashed by more than $400 million, including $12 million for rural areas in Colorado, managed by Lieutenant Governor Diane Primavera. She says AmeriCorps volunteers in small-town schools, libraries, and food banks often go into public service as teachers or wildland firefighters.
Losing these programs isn't just a budget issue, it's a community resilience issue.
Colorado's Montezuma School-to-Farm project in Cortez depends on AmeriCorps members to teach classes and grow 6,000 pounds of food a year for the food pantry. Sorrel Redford is the project's education director.
There's like this whole trickle-down effect. You know, if we can't grow the food, we can't get it to the food bank, they won't have fresh food to give out.
I'm Julia Tilton.
The Trump administration's budget for next year cuts funding for preschool and early childcare education programs. Although the Head Start program was not named directly, it could be affected by proposed cuts. Jessica Laura leads Head Start in four rural Washington counties. She says the ways it helped her disabled child changed both of their lives.
I was a Head Start mom. My son was in Head Start. I would not be where I am today without the services that Head Start provided in our rural communities.
Dismantling Head Start would affect a million American children, nearly half of them from rural families, and close thousands of childcare and early education centers. Extreme weather like hurricanes, floods, and wildfires are becoming more destructive and put pregnant women and their unborn children at greatest risk. 2024's Hurricane Helene was the deadliest Atlantic storm in 7 years. The Daily Yonder's Sarah Malott says lower-income and rural moms were particularly vulnerable.
Some of the women that we interviewed in South Georgia didn't have a way to store breast milk. They lost food from their fridges.
Many faced diaper and formula shortages and had difficulty reaching their doctors. Malott says providers report those patients have struggled with their mental health.
The more trauma a pregnant or postpartum woman faces in an extreme weather event, the more likely she is to experience postpartum depression or anxiety.
Finally, they'll be hooting and hollering in rural California this month when the Jumping Frog Jubilee kicks off at the Calaveras County Fair. A Mark Twain short story inspired the century-old event. Human jockeys stationed behind their locally caught bullfrog are allowed to stomp, scream, and clap, but not touch their croaker. Many aim to break the record 22-foot jump set in 1986 by Rosie the Riveter. For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, I'm Roz Brown. For more rural stories, visit dailyyonder.com.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from the San Diego County Library in Descanso. With mountain lion sightings on the rise in the area, on Wednesday, May 14th at 3:30 p.m., the library will host a program called Living with Mountain Lions. You're invited to join Robin Parks of the Mountain Lion Foundation to learn about basic mountain lion biology, aggressive versus non-aggressive behavior, general safety tips and countermeasures, and how to protect pets and livestock, as well as myths and misinformation about mountain lions. The presentation is not suitable for children under 12. The Descanso Library is located at 9545 River Drive in Descanso. For more information, you can visit the San Diego County Library website at sdcl.org.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is John Tidwell with a Crime Beat report. The La Mesa Police Department and the Naval Criminal Investigative Services, or NCIS, are asking for the public's help to identify and find suspects responsible for the murder of 22-year-old Navy sailor Cornelius Dante Brown 4 years ago. Rewards for information leading to the arrest and conviction of these suspects now totals $65,000. Governor Gavin Newsom recently pledged an additional $50,000 reward from the state of California, in addition to $9,000 from Brown's family, a $5,000 reward from NCIS, and $1,000 offered by San Diego Crime Stoppers. On April 24th, 2021, around 12:26 a.m., the La Mesa Police Department received several 911 calls reporting gunshots. Officers arrived within minutes and found Brown inside his apartment on Echo Court, suffering from gunshot wounds. According to witnesses inside the apartment, including shipmates of Brown, he was shot while answering an unexpected knock on the front door. He opened the door to see two men wearing ski masks and black hooded sweatshirts. One of the men fired multiple shots at Brown. The suspects fled south on Echo Court. The victim was transported to Sharp Memorial Hospital, where he died of his injuries. Anyone with information about the murder of Cornelius Dante Brown is urged to call La Mesa Police Detective Royce Culp at 619-667-7533 or to provide a tip via www.sdcrimestoppers.org.
Groups that advocate for better access to health care have introduced what they call Care for All California, a package of 13 bills designed to shore up the health system as the state braces for the possibility of huge cuts in federal funding for Medi-Cal. The bills aim to get more people insured, connect them to care, and make health care more affordable, says Chris Noble, organizing director for the nonprofit Health Access California.
These priorities will continue to cover gaps within our healthcare system, ensure that when people are denied or delayed care, there's certain accountability, or ensure that folks are getting access to accurate and up-to-date provider directories.
One bill would make sure people with Medicare supplemental insurance can't be penalized for having pre-existing conditions. Another would require hospitals to pre-screen all patients to see if they are eligible for discounted or charity care programs. A third bill would allow undocumented people access to health plans on the covered California exchange. Opponents cite cost concerns. Noble says the bills build on progress California has made to lower its uninsured rate.
It's crucial that our state legislature shows their commitment to advancing a universal, affordable, and equitable healthcare system. This year's package of legislative and budget priorities requires no interventions by the federal government and should be adopted to safeguard our healthcare system in case there are federal attacks.
Advocates have also made a number of budget requests, including one that would give kids who qualify for Medi-Cal continuous coverage from birth to age 5, rather than making their parents reapply every year. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery with Destination East County, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across San Diego's inland region coming up in the last half of May. Lions, Tigers, and Bears invite you to its Wild in the Country fundraising event on Saturday, May 17th from 2 to 6 p.m. All proceeds benefit care of the 65 exotic rescued wild animals at the sanctuary nestled amid the rolling hills of Alpine. This year's event will be hosted by Emmy Award-winning journalist Maria Arceta Dunn, and guests will also enjoy live and silent auctions, live entertainment, craft cocktails, and gourmet food. You can also participate in guided visits to the animals' habitats and hear stories of survival and second chances. Advance tickets are required and can be purchased at lionstigersandbears.org. America on Main Street is also known as El Cajon's largest block party. The event will be hosted in downtown El Cajon on Saturday, May 17th from 3 to 8 p.m. This event is open to the public. America on Main Street is a celebration of the American spirit through appreciation and respect of the many diverse ethnic and historic groups in the community. Highlights include multiple stages of live entertainment, American and ethnic food booths, rides, arts, crafts, and display booths, a petting zoo, bounce houses, and more. The event is held every year in downtown El Cajon on East Main Street and Rhea Avenue between Magnolia and Clidell Avenues. For more information, you can visit the city's webpage at elcajon.gov. A Taste of Ramona will be held May 17th from 11 to 5 p.m. The event, hosted by the Ramona Chamber of Commerce, will feature tastes of local foods, wines, beers, and cider. Proceeds benefit education grants and school programs in Ramona. For tickets, visit ramonachamber.com. The Santee Street Fair and Craft Beer Festival returns May 24th. This annual event features a beer garden featuring craft brews, wine, and spirits. Kids zones with carnival rides and games, live music and entertainment, plus over 200 vendors showcasing local artisans and businesses. The event takes place from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the intersection of Town Center Parkway and Riverview Parkway in Santee. Hosted by the Santee Chamber of Commerce and the City of Santee, this event is for ages 21 and up and is dog-friendly. Get more information at SanteeStreetFair.com. The City of Lemon Grove invites you to Paws in the Park on May 31st from 9 a.m. to 12 noon at Traganza Heritage Park on Main Street. You can meet the famous City Kitty, adopt a pet, and for Lemon Grove residents, get your pet vaccinated and microchipped. Find details at lemongrove.ca.gov. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.